Congratulations. You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me.
That's Mason. We're back on the real recorder today, and since we haven't used it that much.
Oh, yeah, last time we had to use
forget the fucking power cord. I feel like I don't really remember how to use it. Last shot, people. Wage, working artist in the greater economy, it's in his last days of fundraising. And I just found out, because Maysoon always asked about this, if they do not meet their fundraising goal, they still keep the money. So please donate. Whatever you donate is going to make a huge difference. Just fucking do it, you sons of bitches. Okay, so here's a few salutes. I was actually pretty happy with some of the people that I kind of really don't know, but recognize the names of. But number one, we salute you. Here's our salutes. Julia Bryan Wilson.
Yay, go Julia Bryan Wilson. Thank you.
Favorite art historian, put her money where her mouth is, supporting labor rights.
That's right.
Also, Emily Royston, Charles Atlas, Aurora Crispin, friend of the show, Allison Gerber, Zachary Drucker, Justin Vivian Bond, and Jennifer Dalton. There's not a lot of time left. If you donate, we'll give you whatever you want. Whatever you want. Come to Maysoon's house. Have some coffee.
No,
have
not
some
whatever
toast.
You want. I'll give you some coffee and
show
toast.
Up. The address is...
No.
I went and saw Sarah Thornton, the author of 7 Days in the Art World, has a new book out called 33 Artists and 3 Acts. I've read select chunks of it because it's got a bunch of interviews. Well, it was supposed to have what I thought were a bunch of interviews with Andrea Fraser, who's my favorite artist, and William Powell Haida, who's another favorite artist of mine. And I don't know, man. I think it kind of is not my favorite. I don't know. Check it out. I'm not going to really recommend it.
Huh.
Okay. Although maybe it's great. I don't know. I haven't read it all yet, so it's hard to say.
Can you say why you didn't like the parts you did read?
Well, like at least the stuff with Andrea Fraser was just basically her describing different pieces of hers. And I was you didn't even need to interview her to write this. I could have fucking written this. I know what her work is like. If you have access to the artist, you give me the fucking inside scoop that I can't get from every other million interview she's done.
Right.
Or whatever. I mean, the whole book's not supposed to be like Andrea Fraser book. It's kind of about like what is an artist in like the current, you know, financial and commercial world that artists operate in, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
But if you're an artist, you know all this shit already. So, I mean, I think it's kind of, she said herself when she was in conversation at UCB, she writes for like a populist audience. People that don't necessarily know who Andrea Fraser is to begin with. So
are they in the arts? Is just anyone?
Just anyone. You know,
they're
7 Days
enough.
In the Art World was like a New York Times bestseller. Like my mom read it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So cool. It's like standard airplane reading. So I don't know.
Along with the Da Vinci Code.
I also, when I saw her speak, she spent a lot of time talking about Damien Hirst and Jeff Koons. And that turned me off big time. And there were the audience was a lot of older people. I saw some art collectors in the audience that were like friends with her and stuff like that. And I don't know. It's kind of weird, especially after she wrote this. I forget what it was in, like Art Forum or Art in America or something. She wrote an article. She wasn't going to write about the art market anymore because she felt she couldn't write about it honestly without like being in danger of being sued or something for libel or, you know, exposing all the tax evasion that happens. Yeah. So, but this book seems to be pretty focused on that, on like blue chip artists and their kind of commercial activities. So I don't know. I'd be interested to know what anybody else thinks about it.
If anyone else reads it. Has anyone else read it?
People need to call in.
Listen, well, I had someone email in this week.
That's pretty good.
But I also have to apologize to the listeners for last week.
Okay, we'll get to that in the redaction section.
Okay, fine.
But can we I just want to yell at everyone, call in. We see how many subscribers there are. We got a bunch of new subscribers.
They can text us. Why don't you just put Congratulations Pine Tree into your phone as a contact, and then when things come up, you can just shoot us a text.
Smart.
Don't worry about it. We don't need to talk to us in person. I know that can be nerve-wracking sometimes. You don't have
time. I mean, even if you did call
in, you're afraid of us. We might, you know, chew your head off. I don't know. It's okay. I get it. just shoot us a text. It can be anonymous. It might be anonymous since we don't know who you are, maybe.
But just so you know, also, if you call in, I'm not going to answer it because it's a number I don't recognize. I just let it go to voicemail.
Right.
My voicemail
records it. Who the heck answers numbers
it.
They don't recognize? What's the number again?
419.
Okay. I'm putting it into my phone
you
now.
You have it in your phone.
No, I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
419-351-6606. It's almost the mark of
almost
the beast.
Almost 6660, but it's not. It's 6606. Don't let me confuse you.
Oh, wow. That was going to confuse.
I know.
It's not 814-994-519.
Okay.
So we're here today at Veronica Graham's house.
Yes. Here in Oakland.
That's the only time we've ever been at someone's house.
It's true.
Isn't
so
that
far.
Crazy? You are an Oakland-based artist.
I am indeed, yes.
And that brings us up to a total of...
our eighth interview.
Oh, thank you.
Out of the millions of the millions of Oakland-based artists that we still have to meet with.
And you're unique because you're our first comic book artist.
Yes.
I think you're probably our first, like, really heavily art and technology-based artist.
Okay, yeah.
So that's amazing.
I'm breaking the mold.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Uh-huh. And you just had a new comic book out, Scaffold.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Congratulations.
Which is amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's kind of been going for a while, though, so that was just
sort of bringing it
all together into one book. So, yeah, it feels good. I'm kind of ready to not work on that series for a little while.
And so now I really wanted to talk to you about your new digital going into the Matrix.
Yes.
Wait, what? Clarify.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right.
About it.
So, I mean, when you say digital artist, I'm going into that realm. I haven't actually, like, put anything out. I don't know. It feels weird to claim that until I actually, like, release something, but
you feel digital. You have a digital presence.
I'm very yes. Uh-huh. I'm present in the digital world for sure. So the Oculus Rift, which is like a virtual reality sort of headgear thing that Facebook just bought, so I think that's what
for
gave
like
it a lot
billion
of like,
dollars,
yeah,
right?
A lot of money.
$2 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. And then they're doing all sorts of stuff with other tech companies or something, but like Samsung, I don't know if you call that tech, I guess it's
sure
just
absolutely
mobile.
Korea, okay. Biggest tech company in Korea.
All right, okay. So we got like a developer's kit, so it's like a
who's we
me and Jesse.
Okay,
so we're doing it together. So Jesse's background is programming.
Jesse's last name is
Eisenhower. Uh-huh. Like
Veronica.
The president.
And that's your art partner.
He lives in this home too. Yes, my
collaborators.
So we got this thing and we're developing, or so it's a developer's kit and we're making a game. It's not really a game. It's like kind of like a, almost like an installation that you sort of experience in this virtual space. Because like using this device, this developer's kit of the Oculus Rift, it's like not a space for like action, which is what a lot of games are. It's like you actually get sick and you can't really be in there that long. I mean, they'll probably advance that as like, because it's just in the early stages, so that will probably go away. But it's something about when you are in that environment that you kind of can't take in information at a really fast pace. And you don't really want to have to move around that much. It's more you want to look around. Yeah, I don't know. It's something that's why I invite you guys to try it, because it's hard to describe. It's kind of like the opposite of seasickness you get. It's like you get sort of like, instead of you moving on a boat, it's like the environment around you is moving and you're stationary, which is like makes you feel a little off. I wouldn't even say it looks as good as like a lot of the video games that are out, because I mean, I'm using the like Maya, which is a 3D modeling program that can do very advanced graphics, but it's just how you put it in that space, they have to somewhat be simplified. I don't know. I've never had to deal with this before, but there's a lot of limitations just in like learning all these different programs and having to port it to different spaces and use it on these devices. It's like going through, like, first I work in Maya, then I take out these like maps and put it in Photoshop, then I print them out and I paint them, and then I scan them back in, then I wrap them around.
You paint them with a paintbrush and paint?
Yeah, I paint them.
Yeah.
See, because that's where I'm more comfortable. Yeah. But I like using these spaces, but kind of blending it with like a craft that I
use,
you know? And nobody does
that.
I bet
you guys are the only, yeah, I was going to say, that's, I bet the you're thing, the only yeah. one doing that.
It is, this is why I think it's so interesting, is that it's like a wide open field. Nobody's mm-hmm. doing anything in that space that's actually like, if they are, it's so simple. Like, it's not even that advanced. It's, and people are impressed with it because...
Exactly.
Because they just got there and they did it, you know?
Like, is this basically a virtual reality or what?
Yeah,
what
it is. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the space you're talking
about. But it's not
about.
Like, I feel like when I say that, people are like, Matrix, but it's not that impressive. I mean, it's not like.
It's the Matrix.
I don't, yeah, it's cool, but it's not like blow your mind.
It's the first step to the Matrix.
Yeah. Okay.
You fucking plug your head into a fucking.
Well, you put these like kind of awkward goggles on, okay? And then you try to focus it, and it's really never feels quite focused. And then you're in this space, and it's cool, but if you go 360, the cameras aren't following you, so it doesn't quite pick it up. There's all these like flaws in it because it's such early technology. But I think it's interesting because that it's kind of like the early days of like video games that I'm interested too, in that then they had to use this tile-based way to construct these environments. And I think that some really beautiful things came out of that limitation, you know? And so, I think there's a lot of potential.
I mean, is
there.
It still early? I feel like these sorts of virtual reality type goggles have been not around. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it's still early in terms of how far it could go.
I guess it is impressive to some extent, but not compared to like what else, like what video games are at this point as far as graphic goes. It's like not there. It's just, it's not a full immersion. Like when you say virtual reality, I think it's so popularized in media as sort of this experience of like just actually being in a world, you know, mm-hmm. but it's so flawed. It's so like stiff. There is a potential there that these spaces that you sort of experience and you interact with can be really rich experiences.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any criticism from people? Like,
well, I haven't really put anything out there to criticize. Really,
I mean, just when people hear that you're working with it.
I think a lot of people don't know what it is. At least, like, I print at Kala Art Studio. I also teach there. But when I tell people, like other artists there, most people don't know what that is. I just think with technology, it's like, it's a tool. So, you know, it's always going to be, like, better at some things than others. It's like a weird... I don't want to promote it like it's some mind-blowing thing and it's going to be the next like art world sensation. Yeah. But I also feel like I would never write something off, like anything, any medium. I'm just like doing comics or doing what I do. It's like it's outside of that world. And I just don't think there's one clear-cut way to make art or one clear-cut space to put it in. Like, no. I just feel like there's like, why would you limit yourself? Like, and then limit your audience, which is, I think, a big problem with art right now, is that it's so focused on this small audience that's oversaturated and is like, I don't know, not an audience that is buying stuff on the level that can support the makers. Like, you mm-hmm. know, I feel like you need to open it up. You need to be open to those mediums that are, there's just a huge audience for games. Like, why would you not want to make something interesting where a lot of people are going to see it?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my little rant.
Awesome. I loved That's it. Good. I loved it.
I think that might have been one of our first guest rants. We had just seen Joan Jonas speak at CCA, who was one of the pioneers of video, mm-hmm. like when video cameras first became available. And she was doing the dumbest shit, like holding a mirror up and just turning her head and like looking in the mirror and all this mm-hmm. shit on video that now is like so rudimentary.
Yeah.
But because she was like one of the first artists to do it, she was like,
yeah, she was
jamming.
People are so impressed. And I think that's true even with 3D modeling right now. Like a lot of the stuff that people 3D print or that the films they make with that technology, like having used that technology, it's really basic. Like mm-hmm. what the art people, like what artists that I know are using it, they're not really going that deep into that field because it's like, because it's impressive just to that extent. Like a lot of these geometric shapes, like that's the most basic thing you can do. Mm-hmm. Like things that are like reflected or even, you know, like all that. It's like that stuff is so easy in that technology, but it takes a long time to learn these things.
And plus art people don't play video games, so they're not aware of like what
of how advanced
can be
it gets,
done with
yeah,
it.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
I think like the curator of MoMA, I don't think is like hanging out.
Oh, they
might
like
have
Call
kids
of
that
Duty.
Play in, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
in the game that we're designing. So you go into this cabin in the middle of the desert, and I forget, we keep on changing the name. I think it's going to be called Retreat. And then you, Jesse's programmed it so that you can use your head, because it's tracking your head. So your head is how you interact with the game. So you can stare at things or move your head like right or left, and it will kind of activate these objects in the space. And it kind of is playing on sort of a, like a retreat, like a spiritual thing, and sort of new agey
levitation.
And, yeah. Levitation, the kind of meditation, the kind of thing where you're just like focusing in on things and changing stuff. It's got a little bit of like the Force in there, you know? Ooh. Yeah. No, I don't know.
I love it.
But it's like that kind of idea of like, playing with that idea. I don't, it's not so, I don't think it's like pushing any new like conceptual boundary, but just the fact that it's in that space and that's how you'll interact with it is different than what else is out there. So yeah. We'll see what the interaction is.
Have you been to Japan?
No, but I just like, there's one artist, like my favorite comic book artist is Yuguchi Yokoyama, and I think he's like the best ever. He does paintings. He's exhibited at New People, but his stuff, he makes these books that are just like the best. Like, I think they blow my mind. Like, I feel like he's the contemporary artist that I like aspire to.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long have you been in the Bay Area? Are you from San Diego?
I'm from San Jose. I'm like Bay Area. Woo! Right South on. Bay right here. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've been here a long time. But
so,
I,
like, life, your whole life?
For my whole life, but I did go to college in San Diego, and then I studied abroad and kind of traveled for a bit, but then I came back, yeah. Yeah, with all that's going on right now in the Bay Area, just how crazy it is, like, to live here. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like I'm not just here because I'm an artist. Like, I'm here because my family's here, and I'm here because, like, people I've known for a really long time. You know, it's like I'm really connected to this. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like I can't just, like, it's complicated. It would be hard to walk away. Also, teaching, like, I feel like I am the best teacher here in a way than I would be anywhere mm-hmm. else, because I know these communities so well, you know? Like, I know, like, I don't know if I mean, I grew up in San Jose, which is very different than San Francisco, and San Francisco is very different than Oakland, and, you know.
Yeah.
But there is a certain, like, Bay Area
thing. There's a Bay
thing.
Area yeah. thing going on. Mm-hmm.
It's,
I think,
very
so too.
Different than Ohio.
Yeah. I work at Creativity Explored.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, I think okay, so. No good. One's told me otherwise.
Yeah, this is press for them.
Yeah, it's a. I love it. I don't have anything negative to say. I've only worked there for 3 months.
Give us the one-liner on who Creativity Explored is.
Okay, Creativity Explored works with artists with disabilities, and it helps them to, I guess, develop their art career. Some of them are probably bigger artists than I am, you know, like
know,
they are huge.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it's definitely worked for a lot of them. And it's like a great team of people that care very passionately about what they're doing. And the artists are amazing people. Like mm-hmm. My days are so rewarding. Like just to see, it's the way I like to teach, because it's a lot of one-on-one, and it's not even like I'm teaching. I'm more like skill sharing and just talking, experimenting with them, you know, encouraging things, trying new things. Like it's just learning about one way that one individual works and trying to tailor an education around it, or just sort of help them sort of develop their art practice.
What's up with the folded wiener?
Oh. I have many of them. We sell them on our website, mostancient.com. Yeah, Jesse designed that. He had all these like folded objects.
Is it really a folded penis?
So can we describe it for the listeners
that
at home?
That one's not actually the final one. That's like
I'll put a picture of it on the blog.
Okay, yeah, grab the real one. That one's a work in progress experiment.
Okay, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's what we say.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, because that's
congratulations.
The name.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Wait, why do you guys have pine tree? What is the pine tree about?
Veronica Graham, great person to interview. And then we got to wear the Oculus Rift virtual reality headset thing, and I almost cried.
Kate freaked out. It was amazing to watch Kate, because she was like, oh my god, wow, that's the coolest thing ever. She was totally freaking
out. I flipped out, and because I'm a nerdy dork.
Well, the thing I remember seeing, I think when I put the Oculus Rift glasses goggles on,
there was the whole, I forget what that game was called, but the solar system. And
where you're kind of going through space on a tour of the solar system.
You're going through space, and it literally feels like your legs are dangling in space, kind of. I mean, that was sort of wild to me. I think that's why I was so slow in responding, because I was trying to contain, like, freaking out a little bit.
This has converted me soon into a technology lover.
I've never not been a technology lover.
You say as you're answering your, like, 25-year-old cell phone that still has, like, the Zach Morris spiral cable to the car power battery. So we got to experience the Oculus Rift. We'll have a video in the video world, in the link world.
Yeah, it was really something else. And I'm excited. It was great talking to Veronica and Jesse about the game that they're making, just because I feel excited that they're doing something in this world that's,
man,
like,
it makes
so
me
tech
wish
heavy.
I could do that shit.
I think you can, Kate. You'd be great at it. Why don't you do, maybe you could collaborate with them on something.
That'd be awesome. Okay, back on track to the main chorus of lectures this
season. Oh, man.
Season.
So Lucy Lepard, who is like one of the most important art historians alive today, I think.
Absolutely.
Spoke at Mills College, or as Kate likes to call it, Thrills College.
Thrills College.
As part of the MFA graduate lecture series. And she filled the house. I think there were at least 250 people there. It was incredible. She was outstanding for, I think she's 78 years old. She is as sharp as a fucking tack.
Oh, yeah.
It is incredible. But she was primarily talking about her new book called Undermining, which is basically about land use in the region where she lives in Galisteo, New Mexico, and there's lots of land issues going on there, as there are all over the country and all over the world. But she was a sharp, I love that she started the lecture out, can I say this on the line? It's, yeah, on the line.
On the line.
She started the lecture out by talking about how cities are basically large erections.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it was
yeah.
amazing. I mean, it makes sense, but it was just sort
well,
of like,
skyscrapers,
I love
skyscrapers.
Skyscrapers are.
I mean, that's been said.
No, I know, but I mean.
But then she was invited to write about, like, this urban, the city, and
yeah.
as in, like, skyscrapers and yada yada.
Yeah.
Which are erections.
Of course.
But then she chose to write about pits and mines, which are basically vaginas.
Right. It was an incredible way to start the lecture. I mean, I feel like it really set the tone of, like, okay, we're, like, in for a ride here. I
oh,
mean,
yeah.
in a great way, in a
oh,
very,
yeah.
very clever, interesting way. Yeah, no, I thought it was fantastic. It was such, she was very dreamy.
Yes. I just thought it was great. I liked her kind of call to arms that artists should
yes.
be activists, even if your work doesn't have to be, like, very overtly political. You
yeah.
still should be politically active as an artist.
Yeah. Yeah, and, there were a few people, one person in the audience was like, you talk about, you know, taking action. And you
she's
know,
like, what the hell do we do?
Well, yeah, the person
and
was like, what should
Lepard
we do?
Like,
and Lucy's
fuck
like,
you, I'm 78 years old.
She's like, I already did what I needed to do. Like, I mean, it's great. Like, that is, I feel like I've been to so many lectures where it's like, what can we do? And so much of it is about, like, you need to figure that out as part of your action. It's sort of like, I can't give you the answer of what you individually are able to do. It's like, everyone's different. Everyone has different capabilities. Different comfort zones. It's like, figure it out. What I'm saying is that you should do something, right?
Yeah,
it's
and
like,
I mean, she also writes about a lot of artists that are tackling all those things in their work. But she talked about her own activism. I mean, it's not like she didn't already answer that question, really.
Right. I mean, she gave examples of yeah. what can be done. And yeah, no, she was brilliant. I just was super inspired by her.
Yeah, there were some parts where I was kind of like, it wasn't in my wheelhouse of yeah. what I'm interested in.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Like, she didn't even, she, like, barely talked, I mean, she talked about art, but kind of barely talked about art. I mean, she was talking more about the different, like, land use issues going on in her
fucking nuclear
in
waste.
Her community or in her area in Galisteo with different Native American sites and, is it the Hopi site, I think, out there?
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, it was fascinating. I thought it was really, I liked that it wasn't so art heavy. I sort of appreciated this, like, important art world luminary coming and talking about something that was much, much, much bigger than the art world. Like, I want to hear more of that, actually. Go Lucy Lepard, we love you.
new segment on the show that is actually we did last time too.
Redactions, people. It's the time we get to take back whatever we said in the last episode.
I just want to take back everything we've ever said in every episode.
Me too.
Except donate to wait.
I did, however, want to apologize to the listeners because last week I really sounded like a pirate.
What? Because you swore so much?
I swore. I think I used the F word.
As much as you do when you talk normally of how you talk recording.
I couldn't believe it. I was definitely surprised. I was like, oh my God, I did listen to last week's episode because I was curious to hear what the hell was going on.
Total oddity for you
to listen to
the show.
Well, there's a good reason why I don't re-listen to the shows. Clearly I shouldn't because I leave being like, oh my God, what the hell did I just do?
Okay, well, do you have a specific...
I was swearing a lot, and that made me a little uncomfortable. And I just want to say I apologize to everyone. I hope you didn't feel like, what the hell are these guys talking about?
Okay, and I want to redact when I said Catherine Lord was a lesbian, even though I still think she is a lesbian.
Kate! You can't redact it and then take it and, like, what are you doing with that? Come on.
Okay, redactions. We also want to redact the whole redaction segment we just did.
We're redacting the whole redaction, and we're just going to keep redacting. So just basically don't take anything we say as serious or truth.
Unless it sounds really smart and like good, wage. And you should listen.
You can listen to talk about wage. So the other redaction, it's not really a redaction. It's more just like a revisit.
Oh, well, we actually got some feedback from a listener this week.
We got some feedback. My good friend Stephen Bodson, who now lives in Canada, sent me an email.
I feel we shouldn't take any input from anyone not in the Bay Area, but...
He lived. He's like he's more exception. Bay Area than anyone I fucking know.
We can make an exception.
There I go swearing again. God damn it.
Redacted.
I'm redacting my curse word. I apologize. Steven is more Bay Area than most people I know in the Bay Area.
Can we just hit the highlights of this 18-page letter he sent in?
He sent in an 18-page letter, and I sent him an 18-page letter in response.
And this was about the Ai Weiwei show
Ai Weiwei show
on Alcatraz.
Exactly. And so a few, like one of the comments he said was that he thinks we should be, if when we're talking about a show or reviewing a show, that we should actually describe the show, right?
Well, we
which
do.
Like,
usually we
which
do.
Which I guess makes a certain amount of sense.
But
because
soon we usually do. Like the episode when you were gone.
You talked about Alcatraz.
Well, we went
it.
To several shows and... You know, we described what physically was
okay,
there.
So then I didn't, I guess.
Well, but
in the
we
last
had already
episode.
Talked about the show
okay,
on
look,
the show.
We're just talking about
I know,
Steven's
I'm not,
feedback.
This isn't to
don't
you,
worry.
This is to him.
Don't.
Okay, I redact it.
Just redact that shit.
Okay.
Anyhow, so I think that is a good rule of thumb in every field. I mean, like in writing or whenever you're talking.
Right, of
writing,
course,
talking,
you wanna...
whatever. You need to give your audience, you can't assume they know. You can't assume they know what the hell you're talking about. Right. You want to be able to reach audiences that haven't been Alcatraz and seen that show or know anything about Ai Weiwei to some degree. So, yes, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I'm just going to read like a quick paragraph from his email. The Lego room flattens its subjects into two-dimensional, highly posterized images, even while using 3D modeling blocks. That reminds the users that we forcefully remember only one highly visible part of these complex, fully alive human beings. That we don't know them.
Wow.
The bird imagery everywhere was powerful and site-specific. It added to the irony of being at a prison named for one of the freest of the birds, the Alcatraz. As to your
That's the pelican, right?
As to your complaint about the site overwhelming the art, I felt that way at the Getty and at the SF Contemporary Jewish Museum. It's not an uncommon experience. In this case, at least I felt no conflict between the site and the art.
Wait, what was that?
What?
What's different about it from the Jewish Museum?
Nothing's different. He's saying that he feels that in actual art spaces as well.
Oh, the space overwhelms the art.
Okay,
got it.
And he was saying that he thinks that in this case, there isn't a conflict between the site and the art. They did work well together. And so my comment to him on that one, for example, was...
I wrote back a five and a half page.
I said, I, for one, wasn't compelled by the Lego portraits or the kite piece and their immediate viewing experience, as in on the ground floor, being on the floor with them. In fact, it wasn't until I was in the little guard hallway, or what they called the, is it the gun room? like the little narrow hallway that is removed.
Or the shooting gallery.
The shooting gallery, something like that. It wasn't until I was in that hallway looking down on them did I start to really feel the weight of the work and the significance of the location. Being in the position of the watcher, the oppressor, or the state was really powerful to me and quite emotional. My immediate reaction was to get the hell out of there as quickly as possible. It's interesting to think about what the viewing experience would have been like to have the viewers start in that position and then go into the big rooms. Perhaps it would have been more effective, would have more effectively set the stage for me. I loved his comment about we forcefully remember only one highly visible part of these complex, fully alive human beings.
The other great thing that happened this week, and is still actually going on at the time of us recording this, but will be over by the time you listeners are listening, was the lab had their 24-hour telethon. And I'm sorry, but I thought that was fucking awesome.
It was really, really well done. I mean, everyone I talked to was just like having such a great time. It was so relaxed. There were great people there. Carrie Hott, who we interviewed earlier in one of our earlier episodes, was bartending, and she's always pleasant. So awesome to see. And a few good friends were there. You know, Gareth Spohr, Galen were there.
And, like, great Jello Biafra was fucking there. That was amazing.
Well, I mean, we haven't gotten to the performers yet. I'm just sort of setting up, like, the vibe of the room. It felt like being in a living room, literally. Like, being in a living room, sitting with all your friends, sitting with people you don't know, but it's cool. It's not a big deal. Like, I went alone and didn't really look around the crowd and see anyone I knew. And so I just like sat, I was chill with my gin and tonic, just hanging out, listening to Tommy Guerrero, who was playing when I first got there, which is fucking outstanding. It was such a it was like a privilege to be there. There were incredible old school performers there at the set. I was there from the 6 to 9 set. So like Tommy Guerrero was playing. He played for probably 30 minutes, and then Jello Biafra came on after him, and that was freaking outrageous. He was amazing. I mean, I think I gave everyone a standing ovation.
You did.
It was like, I just kept, after everyone's set, I'm like, yes, that was their best. I just stood up and clapped for a little bit.
Jello Biafra read some like poetry, short story, prose kind of things.
That first poem was so, like, just totally riled me up. I kind of hope we can get, I want to get a copy of it.
How much of it ever really matters? Keeping up with every tweet and blather, you wind up missing everything else and wind up becoming that much easier to manipulate. The hatch of your guinea pig cage is open, but guess who waits right outside the door? Stay on that treadmill. Keep running on your little metal wheel. Briefcase in hand, money raining just out of reach. The house, the cars, the kids, mortgage payments. The more you own, the more you owe to maintain it. No matter how much money you make, you're barely making it. More and more overhead, but where is the shelter?
He just did like a couple really like anti-capitalist screeds,
yeah,
political screeds, also yeah, about growing up, you know, in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. It was
70s.
It was pretty exciting. It was very exciting.
He's awesome.
He was awesome.
Well, those
it
fucking
so
kids,
cool,
though, man.
Oh, that's
there are these
right,
fucking two,
oh,
little
my
boys.
God. There were the two boys in the background. So there was a stage set up where there were three people sitting who were answering calls for the telethon. You call in, donate your money. And then Jello Biafra was sort of in front of that. And there were these two kids who were like maybe 10, 8 to 10 years old. And
I'm gonna say they were like, yeah.
One kid had like boxing gloves on and the other kid didn't. And they were literally like
beating each
totally
other up.
Totally beating each other
on
up
stage.
Behind Jello Biafra, like, you know.
And then one kid would walk in front of Jello Biafra and be making fun of him.
It was so funny.
They were bored as fuck, those kids. Were there like all day. I watched
I know,
the live stream before we got there at 7. I was watching the live stream like all afternoon.
They must have been like a board member's kids or something.
Something.
I don't know, but that also definitely added to the entertainment.
I mean, it was like wild there. People were like talking so loud all the time for every performance.
I know. It was great. It was great.
think that's a good place to end it.
All right, people.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
You've listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. Please keep in mind that this whole episode and all episodes that we have made or will make have been fully redacted. And don't forget to call in, leave a comment.
Or text us
at 419-351-6606. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday.
Ciao. You know we can. Go in there. You know we can. Let's win some battles.